I spent 2 years in a master's program in China studies. It was fun and all reading Dream of the Red Chamber and Xi speeches, but I really wish I came out of it with some hard skills too. Had I only known about the University of San Francisco's new master's in applied economics, I could have learned something that would have made me fit for the job market of the 2020s. You know, Python, data visualization, machine learning, A/B testing, all that good stuff that you increasingly see in policy jobs here in DC. With this degree, you can be part of the AI talent surge that Biden's been pitching. Study the economics of online platforms, big data, and AI at the same time as you learn practical tools in econometrics, experimentation, and coding. Plus, for all those non-US students out there, this program is designated STEM, so you can apply for a 3-year extension on your student visa to get to work in the US after you graduate. To learn more and get an application fee waiver, go to usfca.edu/talk.
Here on China Talk, we give the people what they want. Wednesday night, 10:45 p.m., the day when 352 representatives voted in favor of a ban that would force ByteDance to sell off TikTok to a firm not based in a foreign adversary or effectively cease operation 180 days from whenever this bill passes. To discuss, I have on Ben Smith of Semaphore. Ben, welcome to China Talk.
Thank you so much for having me in this emergency situation.
What a week. When we last left off this story, I did a show with Kevin Hsu in March of a year ago after the TikTok CEO testified, which was a disaster. We had the Restrict Act come out of Senator Warner, which kind of went nowhere because people were like scared of how big it was. CFIUS didn't do anything. And things were really quiet until last week, March 5th, Senator Gallagher and Representative Krishnamoorthy out of the China Committee come out with a bipartisan bill, which lays out a framework where basically if you are a big social media app headquartered in a foreign adversary, so China, Russia, DPRK, or Iran, Apple and Google and other platform companies that would enable you to exist in the U.S. cannot do business with you. And you have a 180-day window in which you can, you know, divest and make your money back. We had a 50-0 vote out of committee, and then a really strong bipartisan vote on the floor of the House, which is now going to go on to the Senate. And Biden has already said that if the bill went on his desk, he would sign it. Where should we begin?
It's a really unusual situation. I think I would just say that one thing that I would note that also happened today is that the British government moved in a very swift unilateral way, which is something the British government can do that our government cannot, to block an Abu Dhabi investment fund from buying the Telegraph. And actually, in some ways, very much the same impulse, another Western democracy thinking, you know what, we can't actually necessarily just let anybody come into this country and speak.
So I want to bring this back to January of 2019. I am a grad student in Beijing, and the first article that I write, that I pitched to James Palmer at Foreign Policy, is a piece that I ended up publishing anonymously, basically laying out the argument that TikTok is a problem. I'm pretty sure this is the first piece on the internet laying out the case that it was sort of surreal to see build over the past 5 years, and in particular over the past week, basically everyone who isn't far left or far right kind of concurring with like the central points of the argument. So let me just like take a little bit of a scroll down memory lane. So this piece from January of 2019, the potential for Chinese government interference in ByteDance is considerable. And like other tech firms in China, there's little the company can do about it. At some point, the Chinese government will realize the potential impact content platforms like ByteDance have on foreign public opinion. In such an eventuality, Russian spending a few million dollars on social media ads in the 2016 election will seem like child's play compared to the Chinese government compelling TikTok to tweak its algorithm to boost certain candidates' chances. Chinese tech firms are not enthusiastic partners of these sorts of foreign policy endeavors. ByteDance's CEO is surely not happy to issue apology letters, and face mandated shutdowns of popular products. But at the end of the day, there is very little that these firms can do in a party state environment. I'm curious, you know, Ben, maybe for your reflections, on how the media and politicians kind of digested what TikTok potentially meant to the body politic.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, and that's you were very prescient back as a rookie journalist in 2019. But this seems like 10,000 years ago on this story. But, you know, it was a moment when TikTok was sort of like entering the social media wars and these sort of big arguments over Facebook in particular that had racked American politics. And, you know, TikTok isn't exactly social media like that. It's a different thing. It's a video consumption app, basically. It has some social qualities, but it's not really a social media app. And I think, you know, the U.S., unlike Europe, has totally failed to put in place any data privacy regulation, any kind of age gating for all these other apps. And I think, so there was sort of an obvious reflex as TikTok became the most popular, you know, entertainment app in the country, basically, to say, hey, we should apply these things to TikTok. And actually, because it's Chinese owned, that makes the data privacy stuff extra scary. And I think it's not a total red herring, but it's also true that because TikTok's not a social network, it's actually what the information they get from it, the operators get from it, is much more limited than Facebook, yeah. Right? I mean, you don't see necessarily people's social networks. You find out like which kind of yoga instructor you think is hot. I mean, that's sort of like the big kind of secret that they get about you, which they could probably find in other ways. And there's information that you can buy essentially in the open market about you that is much more detailed and identifying. But I think that the problem, and I would say the answer in some ways to the argument, the obvious argument of like, wow, this is a ultimately Chinese state governed company that could potentially exercise political influence, is that it's a latent threat. There is not a lot of evidence that they've done it. And that is really worth saying out loud, right? I mean, I actually think that the most compelling evidence that it could really be used as a direct political tool in American politics came last week when they mobilized their user base to fight this bill. And the people at TikTok continue to think that was a great idea that really showed lawmakers how much power they have. I really think it deeply backfired, and it showed lawmakers how much power they have and how much power the Chinese government has in a direct way to influence American politics, even though, of course, it is this business fighting for its life. But it was just this huge flex of muscle that I think, in a way, for a lot of lawmakers and a lot of sort of, you know, opinion-making American elites who thought, you know what, ultimately, this is like a app where kids dance. The most popular video is not about Donald Trump. It's just like a weird four-second clip of strawberries. I mean, like, this most of what's happening on that app is like just totally weird and random and not political. Yeah. And I think my impulse mostly is like, you know, it's like what we're talking about is TikTok. It's not really how most people experience TikTok. But when the people who run TikTok say, okay, time to intervene in American politics, and lawmakers are getting these phone calls from 11-year-olds with the school bell ringing in the background saying they're going to kill themselves if TikTok is taken away, I think that really sort of snapped Congress into a kind of bipartisan movement toward banning it, and it just sailed through the House.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the latent stuff, I think there was enough of a track record over the past few years that to know that, like, stuff was being juked. It wasn't entirely clean. Like, when you searched Houston Rockets, you wouldn't find anything. The sort of like pro-Palestine, pro-Israel stuff was really rampant. The one that I thought was most interesting, which I really think was the turning point, was actually Black Lives Matter. Because in 2020, before Black Lives Matter, they really had this vision that this could be a sort of non-political home for like funny entertainment videos. And what happened was, at the start of Black Lives Matter, TikTok decided that, or like the algorithm or whatever, decided like this conversation is too political. We don't want it to be happening on our app. And, you know, people talking about George Floyd and police violence, like, those videos didn't get hits or got shadow banned or what have you. And very quickly, that became a news story. And that is something that is untenable to have in the U.S. So sort of from that point on, you were able to have political speech on TikTok, and it was able to go viral and blow up. And once it's there, the latentness becomes very clear. And then I think what you said totally of like them literally doing the thing that everyone was worried that they would one day do, of like targeting specific districts and finding people who they thought would be sympathetic and giving them push notifications saying, call your senator to lobby for this thing, is like something you can like kind of get away with if you're Uber, but really not if part of the reason people are scared of you is the fact that you might be able to do this one day.
Yeah, but I would say, just to stick on the latent thing for a minute, I don't know the Houston Rockets story, and I think there was also a time when you couldn't search Uyghur stuff, but I don't know. When I last looked at the app, and I've sort of stopped looking at it regularly, but you know those videos that like, I'm from New York, so of course I eat pizza, like that sort of thing. There was like, the fifth video I was served was, I'm Uyghur, so of course I look like this and talk like this in a very normal TikTok way. And I, when you say that there have been instances of them using it for large scale political sort of manipulation, I actually don't think that's been really established at all.
Yeah.
Except for this one vote. I do think though, what we've been talking about is kind of content neutral, like the latent threat, the data privacy stuff. I think the fact that it basically reflected this huge shift in youth culture against Israel and toward Palestine, which was not a product of TikTok, but probably was sort of amplified and powered by TikTok. You know, that's not where the mainstream of American politics is. That a lot of legislators really hated that. And one of the reasons they want to ban it is because they see it as anti-Israel, which is really about, and I think this is where the sort of First Amendment considerations are coming. That's definitely, certainly on the Hill. That's part of what made people hate TikTok, just no doubt. I don't think it's part of the like legal argument. But it does sort of underlie this.
It's possible the fact that it does happen to line up with a Chinese policy priority, which is something that we've covered. So,
yeah, but also,
anyways,
right,
like
exactly, but there isn't a smoking gun that the Chinese manipulated.
It's reflected. It's reflected in the polling.
Sure.
Like I see what you're saying there. So you know, speaking of like a latent political ticking time bomb, so 180 days from today is September 7th. If you are President Biden, like, do you want this to wrap up before the election, after the election? Because, like, you know, this could
There is zero chance that this wraps up before the election.
Okay.
And I think people should just need to, like, take a breath and realize that. The Senate is not going to pass it tomorrow. And if the Senate passed it tomorrow, it would still be in court when the election comes. And there'd be very, very serious legal challenges to this. Right. And so I think,
So I think, you know, if you have TikTok with a gun to its head, doesn't that make it like an even more tempting thing to potentially,
it's a very valuable, like America panicking about this harmless dance app and shutting it down is an incredibly powerful propaganda tool. And also for any authoritarian regime that, you know, that censors domestic speech and controls social media. Now we're doing it too. I mean, that's not nothing. Like that'll, Jamil Jaffer from the First Amendment advocate was talking about it today. Like, I just think the propaganda victory of them forcing the US government to shut this app down that lots of people love is like its own reward, I would think. And maybe on the last day, the last day of TikTok, it's just going to be like chairman. It's just going to be like Xi's face, like deep faked, giving Barack Obama speeches or something. But to everyone, it'll be the only thing you can get. I don't know, but I think I think that their politics of, but also but there's also the reality, it's an immensely valuable company with many, many powerful people invested in it. That will be a huge hit to investors in the U.S. and in China, and so there's a lot of factors here. Can I just add one detail that I do think is interesting?
Sure.
By the way, TikTok has also peaked. Like TikTok DAUs are flatlining. It was a huge cultural trend 2 years ago. It was a big thing last year. These things come and go, and so of course, just the nature of Congress and of our culture, we're having this argument as TikTok continues its sort of long inevitable slide toward becoming Vine. I was trying to explain this story to my 14-year-old, and he was like, nobody uses TikTok anymore. What are you talking about? We're all on Instagram. So
I do think that there's no way China would approve a deal. You know, the thing people need to understand is the investor base is 60% foreign money. And that foreign money is like SIG, Carlyle, Fidelity, General Atlantic, Tiger Global, SoftBank. And then the Chinese money is like, it's not like Chinese deep state, like Xi family adjacent. We're talking like GGV, Primavera, Source Code, Qiming. You know, the CEO, right, was a liberal. You know, I don't think, and this is a company that is not like developing core hardware to like, you know,
so you don't think the Chinese government doesn't have any compunction about screwing ByteDance?
I mean, if they can be convinced that doing this would close the door even further to there ever being foreign investment into China again. But I just don't think that that's going to be something that will resonate.
The stakes from their perspective are actually pretty low, right? I mean, they'll might lose this potential future propaganda tool. ByteDance stock goes up, stock goes down. But because at some level the Musical.ly acquisition years ago sailed through and TikTok grew to this scale without intervention, this is now so much a U.S. problem. And it's something that they can torture the U.S. with, but it's sort of not massively their problem, right?
I just don't think it's a story once it gets banned. I don't know if there's like some sort of... Well, it's interesting. So Tianyu Fang, a Stanford student, wrote a piece on this recently. His line was... The TikTok ban will seemingly legitimize the Chinese model of internet governance, which sees foreign platforms as inherent threats to political stability. I think it's worth taking that argument seriously. But it's also like, I don't know, this is the world we live in now. I don't know how you sort of run the clock back to 1990s, 2000s internet.
You know, it does reflect, though, I do think, like a real lack of internal confidence in the United States and in Britain right now, that our system is so obviously superior that we can withstand some communist speech and that our kids aren't all going to go become communists because some silly app is telling them to. I think people in the U.S. do not now think that our system can withstand some propaganda and feel like, you know what, maybe our system can't withstand some propaganda and we need to ban it. I mean, they may be right. I'm not saying that's the wrong view. But it does reflect, I think, a real deep insecurity about the American system, like in a very big picture way.
Another excerpt from Tianyu, this one co-authored with Tim Huang. We need greater faith in the innovative capacity of U.S. technologists and startups and in the vitality of American soft power in the form of its cultural output on every platform. We need to think about how to unleash those assets rather than understanding U.S.-China competition in purely defensive terms. The path to winning is not to ban TikTok, but to outcompete it. Now, I don't. Where do I disagree with that? I think this is the easy part. And doing export controls on semiconductors and banning TikTok is like it may like I think it needs to happen, but like the way you win a long-term national competition is not by restricting market access to stuff. It's by growing faster, innovating more, developing a sort of like healthy, resilient polity, and going forward on that. And like,
that America's greatest innovator, Mark Zuckerberg, has cloned TikTok's most powerful features, created a system for ripping off specific TikToks and importing them into Reels, and leveraged Instagram's existing social features to make it stickier than TikTok, and he's winning. Like, he may not be out innovating, but whatever it is that Zuck does is in fact working. Tianyu should celebrate that. And also, of course, wielding regulatory muscle on his behalf.
Sure. The one that I think is going to be the more like dramatic long-term consequences one is what the world is going to do about Chinese electric vehicles. Because unlike TikTok, these things are actually like twice as good and half the price. And we are, you know, you had this new ICTS regulation, which came out, I guess, 2 weeks ago, which to me looks like the first step in banning Chinese electric vehicles in America.
And you think on that, sort of, do you think of this as a sort of issue of protecting our domestic industry or of data or of worries about espionage?
Well, I mean, the stated thing is worried about espionage, right? But I do think like the TikTok, like Google and Facebook, I am not worried about needing competition. For GM, like I kind of do. And I think it's like way more like embarrassing and reflective of like old companies that haven't figured out how to compete in the 21st century that they like actually do need this sort of protection in order to in order to compete in the US and European markets.
Yeah, and that is right. And that's, yeah, it's these are all high, in a way higher. You think these are kind of, this is a dress rehearsal for higher stakes fights down the road in a way?
Well, I think it's, I don't want to call the banning stuff a sideshow because I do think that there are certain things that you would just rather not be running around.
What do you think we should ban next, Jordan? Like WeChat?
I think WeChat's gonna stick around.
What about Russia Today?
What do you think about Russia Today?
You know, I guess I tend to think that like we can take it, and that it is Russian propaganda being broadcast on American TV, and some weirdos watch it. But then, like the U.S. system is strong enough to stand up to it. But I don't know. Some days I don't think that.
Yeah, I mean, it's TikTok is the scale, right? It's like half the country is on this.
Yeah, but Russia Today is just mainlining propaganda, where TikTok is really, really 99.99% random, silly stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, sorry. Anything else you want to ban? Just while we're banning stuff.
I'm okay for now. I kind of want to watch Ford and GM sweat a little bit. I think they need that.
Right. That's I mean, and Tesla, right? We'll face some competition.
Tesla, Mercedes, BMW, Fiat. I mean, these guys, they got to wake up. Like those cars
Tesla's
are coming. They're
Tesla's
really
the
good.
The only one that's in the game, I think. But yeah.
But the cheapest Tesla car is $45,000?
Like No, price is dropping. Like, but yeah, it's still more than what
BYD's making it for 10.
Have you driven any of the BYD cars?
I've watched a lot of Billy reviews and I want to test drive. BYD,
cool.
Fly me out.
Wow, would you take Chinese sponsorship for China Talk?
No. I couldn't. I don't
brought
think
to you by BYD. Sorry. I'm derailing this conversation. You're in charge.
So,
sorry.
Like the Matt Gaetz AOC alliance, do you have like a take on that? It's just it's a funny thing.
You know, it's really interesting because you really see in this, and actually in the Ukraine-Israel fights on the Hill, like there is still the sort of shadow skeleton of an establishment, a bipartisan establishment, but you have pretty substantial fringes that take differing views, and they are isolationist on foreign policy and kind of radically libertarian and sort of worried about government control on some of the on this issue. They think that like, you know, there are lots of people who would like to ban extreme speech on social media apps. And the people who are committing extreme speech on social media apps are often like friends of members of Congress and, you know, allies of members of Congress and do not want to be banned. And I think people like Elon Musk see, and he was quoting Rep Massey from Kentucky, you know, see any government intervention to, you know, limit anything that like, you know, their far right, sometimes Nazi friends might be next and they don't want to see that.
Yeah.
Or, you know, or more reasonably, like you are just obviously giving government new tools to control speech that could obviously be used in all sorts of other ways. Like that's not a crazy, I mean, you're obviously on some kind of slope, but I think it is fascinating to see the kind of emergent, this sort of the center fighting the left and the right on this. And it's absolutely the shape of the issue.
Do you think Trump's going to flip?
I mean, I think Trump doesn't want Biden to have any victories. Trump tried to do this and was widely mocked and reviled by people who now support it. And mean, I think his basic agenda is to give Biden no wins, to block everything, and to get his supporters on the Hill to block everything. So I would sort of see it more in that context. I do think if Biden bans, it'll say it's the dumbest thing ever, and that he speaks for the youth, and there, and you know, well, you know, these aren't. I would not say these are kind of deeply held beliefs. I don't know if we want to sort of talk about the process, but there's the Senate is a complicated place, and so that'll be the next stop.
So is Biden going to come out in favor of national marijuana legalization as a way to win back the voters he lost from banning TikTok?
I'm skeptical that people who watch creators who they love on the internet really feel strongly about the company, about YouTube or about TikTok or about Reels. People are just going to move over to another platform and watch the same stuff. Their primary allegiance isn't to the platform. It's to the people they follow. And I think you saw in India when they banned TikTok, it just kind of went away and was replaced by clones.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about the administration politics on this? Have you been following that?
I mean, I would actually be curious what you think. I mean, obviously Biden supports it. It doesn't seem like it's the thing he wants to talk most about every day, but he is behind the bill and you know, they're lobbying for it. You know, what Biden is saying to Chuck Schumer, I don't know. Do they want, I mean, because that's really the sort of core decision maker here will be the Senate Majority Leader. And when I asked one of his aides about it tonight, they said, well, you know, like he's listening, you know, he listens to the caucus. He's hearing lots of different input from lots of different people. And, you know, Warren wants to do it her way with a different bill. I mean, Mark Warner, who's a very influential figure, supports this. And that's actually quite meaningful in terms of the Senate politics of it. But Maria Cantwell, who is also quite important, seems to be on the fence. And so, you know, and Schumer could easily just run out the clock on it if he wants, without ever implicating Biden and killing it.
Yeah, because I think the vision that Warner and other sort of national security minded senators had was that we could use this TikTok issue to solve a lot of other things and take the momentum we have here in order to create a sort of like regulatory superstructure to get at, you know, data concerns more broadly and, you know, do this like do the EV stuff and what have you. And that didn't work with the Restrict Act. And so it was really interesting watching Warner come out in favor, because basically that's like the same thing as throwing in the towel for the big one and saying like, look, if this is all we can get, let's cast in our chips. I feel like Cantwell, like she likes doing these big bills that don't go anywhere. This is kind of her deal, it seems. And you know, like, to what extent will these people not feel like it's a victory or like it's worth supporting, and like they rather prioritize like doing their own big thing, like a 5% chance of that happening versus putting this on the board?
It's not just big things. It's things their constituents care about. Just you and I worry about the latent threat of Chinese political manipulation. But like every parent worries about their daughter's self-image and about, you know, kids getting drawn into extreme politics and on these social media apps. And I think, you know, to me, one of the most interesting things in the TikTok hearing that wasn't remarked on so much was that, you know, obviously a lot of the questions were the partisan stuff you'd expect. But there was a thread of question that was basically, you know, I'm told, you know, Mr. Chu, that you have a sister app in China, and they pronounce it whatever way they pronounce it. I will not on this podcast attempt. But and on that app, there's no violence, there's no sex, there's no cursing, there's nothing unwholesome. And like, you know, why on our American version is everything so terrible and bad for kids when it's so wholesome in China? And of course, the answer is that is an authoritarian state with a very intense censorship regime. And this one is not. But there was like a kind of, and you could sort of, in a different way, a sort of interest in Chinese-style governance from these members of Congress. And just in the real world of their lives, of their constituent service, of their wanting to do stuff that they can run for re-election on. We protected your kids from social media is important and powerful. We like something Chinese influence. Like, sure, they could do this bill or they could do some other bill that where they say the same thing, but it's not. It's not a. They don't have moms in their district freaking out about it.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's really interesting. And, you know, like China, there's limits within apps, which are actually kind of enforced on how many days, you know, how many minutes a day you can use these apps, how many minutes a day you can play video games, the hours in which you can play video games if you're under 18. I mean, like, yeah, you can get your older brother's like ID card or whatever, but I guess not a lot of people have older brothers, whatever. Like there's a, you know, there I think is just like a different expectation in Chinese society now that who knows where it came from, but like that it is the government's role to play a part in that. And the thing you mentioned in that is really interesting, because on the one hand, right, like you just riffed on the Matt Gaetzes of the world who are like, oh, this is, you know, government overreach, like it should be the parents' job. But like there is a real interesting mainstream thing of like, this technology is too dangerous and we as parents like need help. Yeah, I don't know how far that impulse goes. Yeah.
No, that's real. Like, that's like actual real politics. A lot of this other stuff is sort of like Twitter shadow boxing with conspiracy theories about government control or Chinese intervention, which is, I mean, it may be both legitimate, but it's just not, it's really, really not what these members of Congress, when they go into their districts, hear about.
Yeah.
But when they go into the districts and they talk about how they're going to protect your kids from Instagram, that is actually a very powerful message.
So give me the like Ben Smith media historian on that angle. Like, you know, we had freakouts about rap music, violent video games or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know. Different? And I'm a media historian. I have, I guess, two teenagers and a kid who just turned 20. And I don't know. Like, I find the sort of, I mean, every generation, the parents are freaking out about the media the kids are consuming. When we were kids, it was magazines sort of really kind of damaging girls' self-image and creating, and I guess I'm older than you, but, you know, anorexia and bulimia and sort of waifish models creating this, you know, really unhealthy culture around girls' images of their bodies was, you know, and that was really seen as this media phenomenon, as a hugely important social problem that drove depression, eating disorders, you know, and it's like, and I think in every generation, and, you know, I mean, the panic over Elvis a couple generations earlier, you know, I think he was like, they set the law after him because he was too sexualizing the music in a way that was, you know, crossing racial lines and, you know, like, so it's like, I think it's very hard to, particularly when you're a parent, actually, to sort of step out of that it's often hard, it's always hard to be a teenager. And that, yeah, there, you know, and figure out where, what's that, and what of like how few friends teenagers have now and how little sex they have and all that, like, is actually about mobile, certainly, as well as social. And I don't know. I mean, I think it's very, I find it like actually very, very hard to disentangle. I think there's a lot of kind of like glib social science that like tells people exactly what they want to hear. And I don't feel like I really know.
I'm going to close with an excerpt of the podcast that I did with Kevin Hsu, where we sort of talked about the hearing as the end of an era in sort of U.S.-China tech relations. And I think that will take us out. And then I'll play one or two
cool
classic TikTok songs for everyone to ride out into the sunset with. Ben Smith, thanks for staying up on the late night China Talk Hour.
Anytime, Jordan. This was fun. It's a big story.
So I moved to China in 2017, and even then, she had just changed the constitution, the dark clouds were on the horizon. But even then, like, there was still this vision that maybe some sort of, interconnected commercial technological interaction between China and the rest of the world could potentially kind of create build the context in which the U.S. and China could relate to each other on better terms. And this hearing and the Restrict Act really marked to me an end of an era. Not that we need any more. Maybe you can date it from No Limits Friendship and Putin and the war in Ukraine. But the sort of consensus that has been manifested with this bill and TikTok being banned, I think are a real marker for just how far we've gone and how much it's going to take to shake this consensus of the idea that's made it into the American political bloodstream that U.S.-Chinese technological interaction is somewhat akin to like doing deals with the enemy. And everything, you know, any sort of commercial or technological engagement needs to be viewed through that lens because of the broader challenges that are facing the U.S. and China. And, you know, we've done lots of other shows on China Talk that have explored, you know, why that is, whether or not it's justified. You know, is this Xi? Is this the U.S. that really bears the brunt of the blame here? But the consensus that the consensus that's developed seems very, you know, seems strong, and you know, it's like like from a normative sense, I think where I am on this is it kind of has to happen, but there's something that I find about the moment we're in, which is so sad, because I don't think it's inevitable that the U.S. and China had to end up where we are today. And, you know, I'm gonna put it like 90-10 on Xi and Beijing's shoulders for pushing us to this moment. But, you know, when I look at, you know, the likes of Zhang Yiming and, you know, this TikTok CEO who seems like a really nice guy, it's like we would be in a much nicer world if the two countries and the two systems were in a place where they could be able to build trust in each other. And this guy could be thinking about how to, you know, make creators more money and, you know, not have to spend all his time on completely justified sort of concerns about data privacy and algorithmic bias. But that's not the world, and that's not the timeline that we're in. And there's something about the discourse in the U.S. around the U.S.-China relationship, which isn't quite grappling with like the tragedy of all of this. And, you know, it's probably, I think the most tragic thing is not necessarily just the U.S.-China tech relationship. It's the trajectory of Chinese governance over the past, you know, 10, 15 years. But it is something that is deeply sad, that this is the this is the place that we're all in.
I think the marker of this being an end of an era with the TikTok hearing today, the Restrict Act or something like it possibly becoming a law, is not that hyperbolic, to be honest. And this might be because I'm more deeper in the tech industry these days. Obviously, I had a past life in DC, but I work with a lot of entrepreneurs, not just from China, but from a lot of different places around the world as well. I have held hope that while products like TikTok, which poses much more obvious national security threats, could be dealt in one bucket, there are a bunch of different industries, whether it's e-commerce or cloud SaaS or what have you, that are just in a much more innocuous part of the tech industry, where these are just entrepreneurs trying to make products, trying to expand their services, trying to make more money, trying to justify their valuation with their VC investors. These are just kind of normal behaviors, right, in business that used to be much more free-flowing. But now, certainly based on my understanding or reading of the Restrict Act, they're all being shoved under this much larger movement of increasingly adversarial relationship between the two countries that sucks up all these normally very ordinary activities into this context. And I think that is a new level of separation that certainly I have not seen, not just in the past 3 years, but in the past, you know, 30 years, probably. It's something that I think just needs to be recognized at this point. There's not a whole lot of wishful thinking. I think the reality is reality. And a lot of people need to change their plans that they might have drummed up and dreamed up, you know, that Zhang Yiming dreamed up to be a global company to 10 or 12 years ago. needs to change, because that's just the world we live in right now. And that has nothing to do with whether TikTok is a national security threat or not, which there's perfectly enough evidence to suggest that it is. I think there still could be more validation on that claim. Again, we could have dealt with it single-layerly, right? And, you know, yeah. Coming back to all the stuff that we've talked about TikTok specifically in the last 3 years, there are opportunities where TikTok could have led the pack or really stayed in front of this problem as well. Whether it's open sourcing their recommendation algorithm, whether it's open sourcing even the access level between their, you know, Chinese engineering forces and their American engineering forces to show a little bit more actual transparency, not to spend money building a quote unquote transparency center just to, you know, parade a few journalists around and watch, you know, videos about terms and services. Those would actually be ways to technically verify, you know, these claims. And again, it is TikTok going well beyond the norm of the industry, which I can understand why they would feel kind of maybe victimized to do. They're like, why are we being held up to a different standard? Why not? Why is Facebook and Snapchat not doing this? But that is just the world that we live in. It is that if you do want to operate here as a Chinese-owned company, you will have to go well beyond the norm, the standard, to demonstrate your trustworthiness. And there are ways to do that via open source, via other ways of communicating this on a technical level. But fortunately, that didn't happen with TikTok, right? So here we are.
Malibu strawberry ice cream, one spoon for two and trading jackets, laughing about how small it looks on you, watching reruns of Glee being annoying, singing in harmony. I bet she's bragging to all her friends, saying you're so unique.
Make all this world seem right. Only you can make the darkness bright. destiny.